So the title of the talk is Stop the World, I Want to Get Off. I think all of us have in ourselves a real hunger for a holiday, for stopping. We feel often like one of these hamsters. I don't know how they are, all green are they? Inside the wheel? Round and round, doing, running, competing, having, losing, gaining, running, achieving, not achieving, succeeding, and dying. It feels, whoa. And it feels also very speedy and very fast and very active, and we all somehow inside us want this to some way stop. Ma, lo shomea? Lo shomim? So, it's more clear? Okay? So, as I say, we all, somewhere inside us, we really want this thing to stop. We want a break, we want a holiday, we want somewhere else. Which one of us hasn't felt like we need to escape? And so we come to a retreat, and the retreat is often defined in our imagination as a place to stop, as a kind of a holiday. I go to a Vipassana retreat to escape from the pressure of life, and it's a kind of break. That's our, image of a Vipassana retreat. And then we arrive in the retreat and we find it really isn't easy to stop. And we sit here stopped. And we want to escape back to life, to be a hamster again, because stopping is so difficult. We sit stopped on our cushion and the pain begins, and the mind is going much more crazy here than there. Things come up that we don't expect. Things come up that we don't want. Things come up we didn't even know we had. Not only pains in strange parts of the body and so on, but thoughts that we never knew we had and we don't want, and tiredness that comes from, you know, 3 cups of coffee and we're still going like this. And where did that come from? And all these things coming up. And how is that? Boredom, hindrances that Lila talked about. So let's look at this, first of all, stopping. Part of the stopping that we're doing is external, means kind of behavioral. We don't talk, or at least we should not talk. Hopefully most of us are not talking. It's external stopping. We sit a lot. We slow down our walking, our rhythms. We limit ourselves in what we consume. There is an atmosphere of renunciation here, which we didn't talk about so much, but is very important as part of stopping. The food is limited, not exotic. There is not endless stuff that we buy and that we want and that we have all the time. We don't have our telephones, we don't have our... There's a renunciation, a simplicity, which is important. It's external, but it is important in a life in which we are constantly encouraged to consume endlessly without any limit, that we encourage to feel that we have everything and we can have everything. And so it's healthy to meet limit in external usage of the world, the use we make of the world. But the internal stopping is where it's difficult. And it's more than that, it's an art. And in a way, the external is just preparing us for internal stopping. And it's an art. And we do it through working with the breath, working with the body, again and again coming back to the simplest place that we can find, which is the body sitting here in its place, and the breath in the body, the life in us, again and again, the simplest, most direct, clean, clear, uncomplicated place that we can find, which is the power of this. And there we stay as long as we can. And that is an act of stopping. It's an act in which we do not encourage more stuff coming in and more stuff going out. More talking, more issues, more thinking, more busyness in any way. It's the simplest place we can find to slow down and to stop. And we can't force it. We can't design it, this stopping. The only way we can design stopping is to take a anesthetic hardama klali. That's, we can design that, but it's hard for us to design the tachnen stopping. So we have to be clever, because the more we try and control, the more difficult it is to stop, because controlling ourselves is another form of action, of busy, of pushing, of so we have to be clever. And and the way it's done is a kind of slow and steady intention. We direct ourselves towards settling down, and I much prefer the language of to settle the mind, to settle down. Maybe I should say that in Hebrew, but I don't know the word, because it's important. How do you say settling down? Or yes.
Lashkin. Lishkon.
Again. Lashkin?
Hashkata.
Yeah. Hashkata. It's kind of finding steady place in us, in which we can rest in with ourselves. So it's not the same as stopping, because we cannot stop. Stopping is not relevant. It's more like settling down into ourselves, finding a quiet place in ourselves, finding a steady place, and it is quite dynamic. It is not the kind of stopping of putting ourselves in a frigidaire, in a freezer, and freezing us, stopping ourselves with control. It's dynamic. When we sit, we are experiencing. We are going through things. When we walk, we are with the world. We may be steady, but the world is with us. We are touching the world. We are in the world. Sometimes more so, the more we connect with our breath, the more we feel connected, not disconnected, closed, stopped. So I'm using the word stopping because it's a good word, but we have to understand more deeply what it means. There's a beautiful story in the tradition the Sutta of Angulimala. Angulimala was a robber and a murderer living in the forest in northern India at the time of the Buddha. And he was told by a guru that he had to kill a lot of people by a kind of twisted guru. And he killed a lot of people, and eventually the Buddha heard about this and said, "I want to come and help." And all the monks said, "No, no, he'll kill you." And the Buddha said, "No, I want to go and help. This man is suffering. To kill so many people, he is suffering greatly." So he went into the forest on his own, and Angulimala turned up and started to chase him. And the Buddha walked, and Angulimala ran after him, and the Buddha was walking steadily and quietly, and Angulimala couldn't catch him. And he shouted to the Buddha, "Stop! Stop! Stop!" And the Buddha turned to Angulimala and said, "No, you stop. I stopped a long time ago." And Bemed, when I think of this story, it brings tears to my eyes. Because what does it mean, "I stopped a long time ago"? It means I stopped being driven like the hamster by habits, by conditioning, by being a slave to the habits of life, the ignorance, the wheel that keeps turning, that makes our suffering, this wheel that turns, the wheel of life, of samsara. So I stopped, I got off the wheel. Doesn't mean to say he froze, but he got off the wheel. And so stopping is has that quality of coming back to ourselves, of finding a quiet space, of being in the dynamic of life, but letting go of unnecessary stuff, letting go of disturbance, letting go of conditioning, of habit. And we don't need to stop so much. We actually need to stop just enough to be able to do something else, which is really perhaps the key to why we're here. We need to stop just enough to be able to really see where we are and who we are. In the monks, in the monastery, the monastic life, they go into deep states of stopping, if you like, of concentration, where the world gets very, very simple and concentration gets very deep. But it's not relevant to us. We're not in the monastery. We don't have months and years to spend sharpening the knife of concentration. Although there are teachers that come to Israel. We just had a retreat with Shaila, and she taught concentration practice within 10 days, and many of us were very impressed with her way of teaching states of concentration, in which the world really is a bit is pushed away in a way, and we become more secluded in an internal cave where concentration is strong. So there is a purpose to it, but it's not we don't need to concentrate more than just enough to be able to stop and see what's going on in us. That much. And that's what we're doing. And that's why we don't spend the whole week just working on concentration, concentration, concentration. We actually do much more than that. So what we're looking for is to come back to ourselves, to see ourselves as we really are, to slow down enough to have enough attention and steadiness to see ourselves as we really are. And what happens is that when we slow down and pay attention to the breath and body, then things come up. It's as if we quieten the waves on the pool, and when the waves on the pool are quiet, we can see right through the water to the bottom. Or another image, that when the waves are quieter, stuff comes up, floats to the surface, and we see things we don't normally see. So the value of this stopping or concentration or steadiness or quietness helping seeing is that it helps stuff to come up. And Leela said it the other night, that the hindrances, namely tiredness, restlessness, pains also, and agitation, confusion, states of difficulty that we meet, are often the stuff that floats up when we allow space for it, when we don't escape, when we don't run away straight away from any issue. We keep running, like escaping. We don't escape. We sit in our place. We're there. Next breath, next breath, next breath. No escape. That allows stuff to come up. And when it comes up, we have the material to work with. It's us. It's us. So there we see us as we really are. At least some of the first layers are coming up. So in that sense, when we look at the body, for example, I said at the first talk, the first evening, that the body is a window to the universe. And in that sense, that's exactly what happens. When we look at the body with the eye of steadiness, we begin to see stuff coming up. There's a pain here, we don't know quite why it is, maybe there's some history. There's tension here, maybe there's a story behind it. There is agitation and boredom, maybe that's because of how much conditioning, hatnaya, and escaping I've been doing. So when I stop I get bored, because I'm used to stimulation, I'm used to a lot of stuff coming in, so when it doesn't come in I get bored, the mind switches off. Many things we see in the body, states of quietness, states of disturbance. The other night Simi taught the elements, right? Earth, air, fire, water. This is the universe. Don't belong to us, the elements. They are the universe in us. Even the weight of the body when we experience it, it's not us. Gravity doesn't belong to me. Right? It's a window to the world. And so the body becomes, in a way, a window to bigger things, to understanding ourselves, to understanding the world, when we are steady and we look. When we look at it, spins all our history. The whole history book of ourselves is there in that mind. All the conditioning that we've had. Maybe everything that is there from the moment we were born, and maybe before we were born, and maybe before this life, all that stuff is there in the mind. So when we look at the body, we see the world, and we look at the mind, we also see it. And it doesn't also belong to us, by the way. It's all the stuff that's come into us from the moment we were tabula rasa, small baby. Stuff's coming in, coming in, coming in, and then we say, oh, it's mine, that's me. It's not me. It's all the stuff coming in, coming in, coming in. After that we say it again and again as if it's ours. It's not ours. It's just stuff coming in. And we see it. We see our biography, we see our history, we see the stories, we see what we don't like, what we do like. That's the seeing that happens when we stop and sit quietly and let things open. The there's a nice kind of poem in the Theravada tradition that expresses this chain of conditioning. It says, sow a thought, means sow lizroa, sow a thought and reap the katser, a word. Sow a word and reap an action. Sow an action and reap a habit. Sow a habit and reap a self. Sow a self and reap goral, a fate. Our fate. So there's a whole chain there. Starts with each thought that is growing and going out in the world and doing things. There's a whole chain. We go back down the chain. We look at words, we look at actions, we look at ourselves, we look at thought. We look at this chain and we see the source of it. Here I am, with all my history, with all that conditioning, that is what we mean by returning to ourselves and seeing ourselves. Seeing, vipassana, to see clearly. Vipassana, to see clearly. It's seeing ourselves as we really are, not avoiding, and going into the sources of the makorot inside us. And once we see it, we're no longer really a prisoner. It's just what it is. It is what it is. It's not easy, and it needs work. It needs us to keep doing it. For example, we can have a tendency to critical thinking, thoughts against ourselves. I'm not good at this, I sat all the time, I only have two breaths in a and then my mind goes off. This is not, the guy next to me is much better, surely much better at this than I am. Oh, I'm never going to be the same as Leela, Christopher, Stephen. They are, they're up there and I'm, And all of a sudden, if we see all of that stuff that looks so real, it's just critical thinking. It has no reality other than conditioning stuff that's stuck inside us. It has no reality. It is not the truth. It is a chain of critical thinking. That's all it is. So we can sort of close it up and put it away. But it needs the seeing to notice it. Otherwise we believe it. So we don't need to believe all this stuff. We just need to see it. So layers and layers. So the question is, beyond seeing, how do we really get rid of it? How can we really transform? How do we really use the power of our seeing, of awareness, of clarity, to transform, to change, to get out of the mess, to clean all the mess? It's already happening, by the way. This room, as I said to my group the other day, this hall is halfway between a temple and a rubbish bin. Chetia derech ben mishkan ve pachashpa. Because we're already letting throwing stuff out. We sit, stuff comes, we let it go, we work with it, we don't work with it. It's already happening here, by itself. But we can now begin to be more active in cleaning our inner life. And the first thing is a deep truth that the Dharma can can bring us, which is that the human being is not a thing. The human being is not an object, fixed. The human being is a dynamic, a completely dynamic being which is made constantly every moment in relationship to the world. That's the Dharma comes with an extremely freeing understanding that the human being is not stuck, frozen with all the problems. We are in a dynamic, we are, everything is flowing, everything is changing, we are in a dynamic condition, and the world is constantly making us, and we are making the world. And every time we think, every time we open our eyes, every time we wake up in the morning, we are recreating ourselves again and again. It may seem like we're fixed, but the more we look at ourselves, the more we see the dynamic, that we are fully, everything is moving inside us. I was looking at, just before, just as I was coming here, Lila was encouraging me to tell you this story, that I was washing my face and my hands, and I looked in the mirror, and all of a sudden I was looking at myself and thinking, whoa, look at this face, it looks so old, there's so many lines, how has that happened? It's happening by itself, that's amazing, look at that happening by itself. My thoughts are, I'm 20, 25, 30, I'm all of that stuff. But look at this face, where did that come from?
Wow.
That's a story. So, I don't believe it. There's nothing fixed there. There's nothing fixed, nothing to believe in. It's a changing territory. We, the human being, is a changing, moving territory that is constantly being created and changing and moving. So when we come back to ourselves, return to ourselves through sitting, walking, paying attention to ourselves, we return to a moving object. We don't return to anything fixed. We come home to a moving world. That's our home. We don't come home to a self, I'm back home. Frozen, like Sleeping Beauty. And this creates one of the most powerful teachings that the Dharma has to offer, which is that we don't need to get rid of stuff. It goes by itself. And I'm sorry, all of you psychologists here in the room, you're out of a job. If we keep going and everyone begins to sit and do vipassana, you're out of a job, guys. There is a Tibetan word called self-liberation, that if we see the dynamic nature of everything, it liberates itself. We don't need to look for freedom. We don't need to hunger for freedom. We need to watch and see that it's happening by itself right in front of our eyes. When we see a thought, that thought lasts no more than a fraction of a second and it's gone. Because a thought keeps coming back, we feel stuck with it. But if we look at a thought truly as it is liberating itself. Meaning, it's like a balloon that pops, and as it pops, a bit of us also pops. It takes us with it. Because this thought, which we think is me, it's just a balloon that goes pop, and where is me, that we thought was the thought? Gone, also. So, everything is liberating itself. The only problem is it keeps coming back. Keeps coming back because of force of karma. So we think, okay, I'm a critical person, there's nothing I can do, I'm down on myself all the time, as an example of something that feels very fixed. But if we look at this critical mind, for example, or this angry mind, indeed it keeps coming back. But if we keep looking at it, we see it's just repeating itself, It's feeding on itself. And if we look at it, the 500th, by the time we've done 500 times we've met this demon in us called the critical mind, we got tired of it. And it stops, it doesn't keep coming back. We just see it again and again in its dynamic nature, and slowly it loses. By the time we've seen it 500 times, it hasn't got any interest anymore. We are totally sick of it. We know it. It's not us. It doesn't need to be there, and it's gone. So it takes time. But if we sit, and maybe we do every sitting 10 times, we see the critical mind. At the end of a week, we might have 100 times we see the critical mind. We're already a bit sick of it, and we already go out of this retreat a bit freer from the critical mind. A bit. It takes time, but so does everything. So the problems are not fixed. They are dynamic. They keep coming back. We have to notice their dynamic nature, and they liberate themselves. We just have to allow them to go. Let them go. Let them go. Watch them as they go. Watch them as they pass by. A critical thought comes, it's there for a moment, and it goes away. Watch things as they pass by. That's vipassana. And that's where they free us. Because if we keep doing that, we watch this show of stuff that arises and passes by itself. We watch it as it comes, we watch it as it disappears. We say, thank you very much, I appreciate you, you're a nice guest, you're part of me, so you're a guest, but now enough, here's the door, bye bye. Oh, another guest, alright, come in, and bye bye, Lehitrold, see you again, you'll see him again, but each time, bye bye, hello, bye bye, hello, and after a while, we know it's not us anymore. There is this nice Zen story that I said it today to one of the groups, and I keep telling it, so you may have heard it before, but it's very sweet, about a student who has a lot of anger, and he asked his teacher, can you please help me deal with my anger? And the Zen master said, all right, bring your anger, and together we'll deal with it. Natapel biyachad, bring your anger, we'll deal with it together. And he said, well, at this minute I don't have anger. So the teacher said, okay, so go home to your hut, and when you have anger, bring it, and we'll deal with it together. And he says, yes, but it takes 10 minutes for me to walk from my hut to where you are, and for sure in this 10 minutes the anger will have gone, and then we can't deal with it. So the teacher said, you see, even if you want the anger, you can't have it, you can't control it. It's not you. It comes and goes when it wants. It's part of the world, it's not you. So even something like that, which seems very strong, powerful, our anger, it comes and it goes when it wants, how it wants, through conditions and context at a certain time. Conditions create anger, there is anger. Conditions change, no anger. It's not us, it's not stuck. We don't need to identify with it. We don't need to see it as a problem with us for our life. We just need to watch it as it comes and as it goes. So there's another kind of seeing. So far the seeing I've talked about is a kind of cleaning process, a kind of purification, tihur. Layer after layer, learning that all this stuff on us is not ours. It comes and goes, and that experience of freedom. There is experience of freedom. But there's another form of seeing, which is a direct seeing our freedom. Because we are much freer than we think. And when we stop and look carefully at who we are, we will see their freedom. You see, freedom is not something that we can design, that we can force. It is not the result of thinking. We can't think our way to be free. Or we can a bit, maybe. We read enough books. But it's not easy. And it doesn't work. We need to notice how free we already are. There's a nice sentence from, I think, Robert Pirsig said, "The only truth that we find at the top of the mountain is the truth that we bring up with us." Means that we need to notice the freedom we have in the first place. Because without that freedom, we couldn't even stop. We couldn't even get out of being a hamster in a cage. The fact that we can do this work needs us to be free, to some freedom right at the beginning. On the other hand, we can't be somebody else. We can't be free because we want to be free. Here is the trap or a catch. It's often we feel that we just have to believe in the Mashiach and we'll be alright, or we have to kind of reach out there, or we have to reach high up to the top of the mountain. When we get to the top of the mountain, that's when we'll have it. No, it's not there at the top of the mountain. It's there in us when we begin. So we need to notice the freedom that we have. We notice it as when we look at ourselves, we see space, we see potential, we see things changing, developing, we see quietness at times, we see moments when we're walking and we stop and we feel the wind on our face and the tree opposite us, and we feel just things are fine as they are. And whenever we have that little message, things are fine just as they are. God didn't make mistakes. Things are fine just at this minute, here I am, in my life. That's a moment of freedom which all of us, from childhood, we have it. In more or less. And we should appreciate those moments. Appreciate and look at them and recognize them. And it's also not easy because we're critical and we want something and we want to push ourselves, that's liach and so on. We forget that there is a place in us where we can just watch and see space and this kind of freedom already existing. A little bit too much freedom is frightening. Freedom is frightening. One of the reasons we're not free is it's because it's too scary to be free. We want to be back in a safe place called the me that I know. We don't actually want to be free, too free. We feel we might become an angel and float away. But we are quite empty inside. The dynamic, the message of the Buddha, which is that the dynamic nature of our being is also empty nature. Otherwise it couldn't be dynamic. The fact that it's all moving means it's also, there's emptiness here, and it's something that we don't want to know about too much. But it really helps us to recognize freedom in us, more or less. And so do appreciate that in this retreat. Moments of just simplicity, where you're resting in the simple moment of being. This is not in the mind. The mind is a filter. This is in the soul. This is in somewhere bigger than the mind. So So, to finish, I just want to wish you all the power of seeing and letting go of the stuff that we have accumulated in our life, seeing and enjoying the spaces and the freedom that we have in us already, and being fearless, being courageous, being able to rest in the unknown, in the dynamic nature of ourselves and of the world. So let's take a few minutes to be quiet. זה? רחב, אוויר, כוכבים, לילה, רחב, שקטה, ומודעות ונוכחות.